not to say that researching and writing history requires no specific skills. On the contrary, depending on one's period and place of concentration, the technical requirements can be steep. You may need to master a difficult language, Aramaic, say, or Mandarin, or in some cases more than one. Some subfields, such as medieval history, require advanced paleographic training just to read the documents. For others, you need expertise in archaeology, macroeconomics, or linguistics. And while it might seem easier to work on a recent period in your native language, specialists working on quasi-contemporary history will tell you that an infinite amount of potential source material can be its own kind of curse. History does not have a governing technical method precisely because it can accommodate so many of them, from sifting through dirt to reading philosophy. But once the research is done, a historian is expected to put forward a narrative and argument that any well-educated person can understand. History, one is tempted to say, is written by specialists for non-specialists. But even that is not entirely true. Witness how often people with no disciplinary credentials produce superior works of history. In just the last 15 years, the most prestigious history award in America, the Pulitzer Prize, has gone to an English professor in 2002, to journalists in 2003 and 2007, and to a banker in 2010. Imagine, by way of contrast, the Nobel Prize in Physics or Economics being awarded to someone with no formal training in those fields. Eclecticism is what makes the discipline of history so vibrant and broadly appealing. The skills required to do it are those both of the specialist and of the non-specialist. To define cutting-edge questions, academic historians must immerse themselves in a large body of scholarship that defines topics and debates. Planning a project on some aspect of American slavery, the British Empire, or the Vietnam War requires finding your way around a vast literature, so that you can be sure of contributing something new and worthwhile. On the other hand, the research process itself is something most historians learn about on the fly, just by doing it. Aside from technicalities such as language and paleography, historical research is mostly impossible to teach. It requires ingenuity. Where do I start looking for evidence about same-sex relationships in the 17th century? Initiative to figure out how to begin, whom to talk to, where to go, and persistence to sift through many boxes of archival material or pages of online documents to find the elusive evidence one is tracking. How do you teach researchers to cope with the letdown of finding that the archive they've traveled to doesn't have what they want, and the imagination to turn the situation around by figuring out what the disappointing documents might actually contain that they had not anticipated? The skills and temperaments of good research historians are very similar to those of successful journalists: curiosity, ingenuity, patience, and doggedness. And like journalists, good historians know how to put a story together and make it understandable to a wide range of people. It is much easier then to define history by contrasting it with other disciplines than to describe a historical method. People in fields like art history, literature, or philosophy usually work on an existing object. They exercise interpretive skills on a set of texts or images that serves as a point of departure for their research. The novels of Toni Morrison.